Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
And welcome back to another episode of Talking Eds, presented by students of International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, Cohort 2. I'm Aibanu from Xinjiang, China, your host for the day. Today our topic is feminism and is presented by Yuna from South Korea.
Hi.
And Amelia from Canada.
Hello.
Today we will explore different feminism organizations and what exactly it can mean to be feminist. We are also joined by IMASC students Auburn Scallon.
Hello.
And Kelly Roberts. Hope you will enjoy learning with us.
Thank you, Aibanu. Before we start discussing different examples of feminist organizations, it's important to first discuss what feminism is and what that term even means. This, however, is not an easy task. Feminism is a loaded term, and it means something different to different people. For some, it's an empowering word that signals an emphasis on equality between all genders. For others, it's a personal attack that references angry women with unkept leg hair. However, in reality, there are dozens of categories and subgroups of feminism, including liberal, racial, cultural, eco, separatist, trans, black, socialist, and i-feminism. Each of these types of feminism has different outlooks, beliefs, and goals, and while some overlap, others are on opposite ends of a spectrum. However, they're all concerned with issues relating to gender equality. Trying to define any of these types, let alone all of them, is not the focus of our show today. Each category has their own strengths and weaknesses and stands independently. What we are going to do on this episode, however, is emphasize the diversity in feminist organizations and discuss the strengths and weaknesses of this diversity. We have guests joining us from different countries and perspectives we will try to add ourselves from our own contexts.
So first off, we are joined by Auburn Scallon, a student in the International Master of Adult Education for Social Change, currently studying at the University of Malta, who is going to talk to us today about her experience forming a feminist group in Prague. So Auburn, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure to be here.
So tell us about your experience in the feminism community. And so when you started this feminist community in Prague and how it came to be?
It was a very informal process. I can't call myself the founder because it wasn't my idea, but I was one of the first members of a group called Prague's Intersectional Feminist Meetup. And it started out of a Facebook group of women who were looking for a space to be able to talk about these ideas. But because many of us who were foreigners living in the Czech Republic didn't see feminist conversations in day-to-day life very often, so we wanted to find a community where we could have these discussions with similarly minded people. And it started out of very informal meetings in someone's living room. Like, let's just put a group of women who call themselves feminists together and see what topics come up.
So you're originally from US, so do you think if you had followed the same process, or is feminism different? So how was the group? Was that different from other groups?
It was definitely different living abroad, and particularly I think some of the people that were looking for this community were lots of other international citizens. We did have some members who were Czech, who were from the area, but we also had people from Australia, Britain, Egypt, Germany, the US, all over the world. And I really think that was one of the strengths of the group, and it brought all of our attention to different issues of feminism that are around the world that I wouldn't have talked about in a feminist group in the US. Mm-hmm. For example, we had a Russian feminist blogger who put together a project where all of us looked at the wishes that Russian women get on International Women's Day And we talked about our responses to those wishes through all different contexts. Mm-hmm. And to see the variety of reactions of some felt, oh, this is very similar to my culture. Some felt this is demeaning. Some felt this is natural or normal. But we could have all of those discussions in a safe environment where we weren't criticizing someone's culture. We were coming together mm-hmm. with the purpose of talking about these ideas. Mm-hmm. And I also really appreciated that we put the idea of intersectionality into the title of the group. Mm-hmm. So that meant we had trans members, we had more conservative beliefs in the room, we had more radical beliefs in the room, but mm-hmm. we really wanted to create a space where all of those beliefs were heard and were included.
So do you have any the most impressive like a comment among the discussion?
Ooh. I don't think I could pick out any one comment. I can mm-hmm. say I learned a lot from having trans members in our group mm-hmm. because I think from my impression worldwide, that's not generally a very visible community that gets a lot of media attention. Mm-hmm. So even when I try to read articles from different places, I am rarely lucky enough to hear personal stories and the kind of the voice of someone who I can put a face to instead of an academic test. So it was really rewarding to have someone that was patient and kind enough to teach us on perspectives that we weren't necessarily well-versed mm-hmm. in despite coming in as feminists.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing us today.
And thank you, Auburn, for sharing with us your personal experience of starting a feminist organization in Prague. Now, let's move on to a special case, this time in Asia. With China as a powerful central force, Confucianism and its cultural effects are very strong in much of the continent. For example, regarding the role of women in the context of Confucianism, there are challenges to the widely accepted belief that Confucianism furthers women's oppression, and explorations of Confucianism as an ethical system compatible with gender equality.
Yeah, that's right, Amelia. So even there have been so many gender stereotypes passed through generation to generation in Asian society, it is harder to break the stereotype than in Western countries. And also, you can see different aspects of feminism in each Asian countries. For example, the Me Too hashtag movement is prevalent right now in my country, South Korea, but there are not many movements in Japan. So according to the Japanese researcher Osawa, Japanese women are more likely to keep their housewives' roles to care husbands or children as virtue of their life. I'm not talking about there are no feminists in Japan, but compared to other Asian countries, there are more conservative women in Japan.
That's a really interesting perspective. So, while we don't have time to cover all feminist movements in Asia, mm-hmm. Yuna, do you think you could share with us the story of feminism in South Korea and maybe how it started?
Yeah, maybe I can start with the first feminist in South Korea. So, she used to be the hidden figure, but she became very popular, famous in various ways these days because of the increasing attention to feminism in South Korea. So Na Hae-seok is a modern Korea's first woman artist and was never groomed to be ordinary. So she was born in 1896 and that period was under the colonial administration of Imperial Japan. Unusually for the times, her parents chose to educate their daughter at a progressive school run by Protestant missionaries. And at 17, she was sent to Tokyo so that she might obtain a first-rate artistic education.
So it sounds like she came from a family of aristocrats.
Yes, yeah. Yes, she was. So why I wanted to share about her stories is that so she's tried to negotiate a new femininity within the confines of her Koreanness. So Na Hae-seok's writings, she extolled the virtues of free love and marriage between equals and justified divorce as a way out of an unhappy marriage. It was a very liberal and proactive action at the times. So she wrote that it was unfair that a Korean man should demand chastity in a woman while being unchaste himself. and that Western man or man in Tokyo to understand and respect me if I am not a virgin.
So really, her writing created a communication path with women at the time. I think the concerns mm-hmm. of her time are probably not too different from many of the feminist arguments we hear today.
Yes, you're right, Amelia. So critics upon viewing her self-portrait have remarked that the way she portrayed herself indicated that she aspired above all to be a Western woman. So she insisted she would not fall into a traditional role with her husband, but her life kept insisting on her traditional role. So the biggest thing was happened at the time that her husband colluded in accusing her of having an affair, which was not really true. So she was a victim of that case. So he promptly filed for divorce and was granted full control of the marital property, including her proceeds from sales of her paintings and full custody of her children. Her lover and her family also disavowed her. So she had been allowed a life, but she would not be allowed a mistake as well.
Wow, so this case and this accusation, it must have affected her life and her artworks a lot. Mm-hmm. What about some of her more famous artworks or literature that she left as a legacy?
Mm-hmm. So Broken Destitute, Nahesaw continued to paint and remained defiant to the end. So in an essay, for example, entitled My Divorce Statement, she condemned a Korean society that would ostracize her. So, and in her self-portrait painted during the Heady Year in Paris, Hesse dominates the space. So she looks scaredly back at the view. I'll define myself, she says. And if you don't like it, you cannot make me go away.
So she really started paving the way for many feminists in Korean society, and really globally, by leading by example. Thank you for sharing this example with us, Yuna. So far on the program today, we've heard Auburn speak about creating a diverse feminist group in Prague, and Yuna speak about feminism and how it began in Korea. And now we're going to take a bit of a turn, and we're joined by Kelly Roberts, another IMASK student, who's going to speak to us a bit about feminist organizations that she has worked with. So Kelly, welcome to the show. Can you introduce yourself a bit for our listeners?
Hi, my name is Kelly, and I am a youth and community worker. I tend to work in non-formal settings, so typically that's for non-profits, NGOs, or some kind of community-based organisation, generally civil society, and very rarely do I do work in a formal setting. I have been commissioned through certain roles to do workshops in schools, but always still under the general theme of non-formal.
So within these non-formal organizations, Kelly, you've worked a lot with different feminist organizations. Can you talk a little bit about what this means to you, what a feminist organization would look like?
I would say that in my experiences working in Bolivia, in South America, in the UK, and in Swaziland and South Africa, I would say that although feminist organizations can look very diverse in terms of ages, colors, languages, all the different ways you can be diverse, there are some key features that I perceive as essential to being considered a feminist organization. The three main ones, I believe, are that a feminist organization is critically engaged with the world. That may be at least the world that they see. So you could have a fairly limited perspective of the world. For example, you may not leave your home environment yet you may still be fighting in a critical way for equality within your context. Other organizations would consider themselves more globally engaged, but I don't think the scale actually diminishes how feminist you are or not. I think the fact is that you are critically engaged with your world, whatever the radius that is.
Yet being critically engaged is something we've discussed on this show before, and I really like what you added about scale. It's important to keep your community and locality in mind. So feminist organizations, the one you've seen, how have they engaged politically? Because I know this is also an important pillar in a feminist organization.
The feminist organizations I see working, they move beyond individual struggles and individual fights. I mean, that can still be a political thing, but they really try and claim space in a public arena, and they really try to be heard and seen.
Yeah, and I think often when people think of political, they think of their politicians or of debates on TV or even on Facebook. But really, a lot of politics is just about engaging in these structures and making yourself heard. So we have criticality and politics. What to you is the third element of feminist organizations?
Thirdly, being active. So they do something. A feminist organization doesn't just say they're going to do something. They may raise awareness and advocate for others, which can be a verbal activity, you know, whether written or spoken. And some will say that words aren't action. I disagree. But even if we concede that for a moment, the feminist organizations I see working are active, and they do go beyond mere words, let's say. They do something.
So you said earlier you've worked extensively in a lot of different countries and NGOs and organizations. Could you maybe give us an example of a feminist organization you've worked with?
For example, in my time in Bolivia, I saw quite a range of feminist organizations working. And the main feminist organization people will think of in Bolivia is a group called Mujeres Luchando. And they are, let's say, your typical, in speech marks, right, your typical radical feminist organization. They do demonstrations on controversial topics, for example, abortion or domestic violence. They do graffiti, street art, they do talks, and they do interviews in the media. Crucially, actually, they raised funds to get a base for their operations. Basically, they have a cafe, and it's a kind of educational cafe too. So they offer various different activities and learning opportunities in the cafe, obviously fitting into their broader feminist framework. Anyway, they are perhaps, as I say, the typical, what people perceive as the typical political, active, like radical, sometimes aggressive, disruptive, combative, is that a word? anyway, radical feminist group.
Yeah, and as we discussed at the beginning of this program, there are many different types of feminists, and it's true that they aren't all equally welcomed. So what about perhaps a less radical group? Have you worked with any groups like that?
They're not always welcomed. They're not always well received. And this compares quite dramatically with the more rural community groups I worked with in Bolivia, where we work together, focusing much more on facilitating a quieter process of critical consciousness raising. So there was not graffiti, there was not shouting and marching. I really do not mean to personally criticize that. Before, when I note in note the kind of radical negative perception. That's actually, I don't share that view, but that's an aside. But the work I was doing in the rural communities was much quieter. But actually, that really taught me that quiet doesn't mean less feminist.
That is a really interesting example, Kelly, because the context and the environment of these organizations work in is so important. The political setting, the infrastructure, population, and so on, it all shapes what can and should be worked on. So thank you so much for sharing those examples with us. Overall, from all of your work with different organizations and NGOs, do you have any lessons or questions you've gathered from your work that you can share with us?
Some questions I will ask, I don't have the answers to, where do quiet feminists fit in? And must you call yourself feminist to be so? Also, as a concluding remark, I would say that my experiences in these different contexts have shown me that you can have very different realities for women in different settings, really not very far apart from each other.
Those are some really important questions for us all to keep in mind as we continue questioning and considering feminism. Thank you, Kelly, for joining us and sharing some of your experiences with us.
Thank you very much for listening. And for inviting me to be part of the show.
Thanks, Kelly. So I want to draw our attention back to one of the questions that Kelly asked, which was, do you need to call yourself a feminist in order to be one? Slowly building alongside this push towards feminism and equality has also been a resistance to the idea of feminism as it's presented today, with many women and men rejecting the term altogether. There are many reasons an individual may not consider themselves a feminist, and among them is a perspective that's building that a majority of feminism you hear about and read about today is dictated by a white Western woman rather than representing women globally from different contexts. This is a bit of a provocation, and not everyone's going to agree with it, but essentially, this type of feminism is challenging the idea that white feminism, which importantly does not refer to any person who's both white and a feminist, but instead to a specific type of feminism that does not acknowledge the crossover between race, sexuality, religion, and different kinds of diverse voices. This is the feminism that individuals are increasingly rejecting.
So one of the issues inherent in fighting for equality is that, at least on a surface level, you're looking to make everybody the same. When you focus on equality, this assumes that gender issues affect each woman in the same way, which is simply not the case. Between and within countries, there are huge gaps in women's rights. While in the West, the gender wage gap is often touted as a symbol of gender inequality, in other parts of the world, women lack basic rights and freedoms in education or access to health care.
Yeah, and we're hopefully all familiar with the concept of privilege. It's not always a comfortable conversation to enter into, but it's an incredibly important one. The reality of the world today is that my voice, as a woman who is also white, is given a larger stage than the voice of a person of another race. This isn't because my ideas are better, because I have more experience, or because I worked harder for it. In fact, the contrary very well may be true. It's just because of the racism that's ingrained in our social systems, and this discrimination cannot be ignored when discussing feminism.
Yes, and this is one major issue that is pushing people away from identifying themselves as a feminist. The large portion of feminism does not account for diverse perspectives and experiences. Another issue, however, is the pressure that is put on women to identify as feminists and agree with a wide range of what are typically liberal ideals. Issues including gender identity, LGBT plus rights, or even the political party you belong to or religious beliefs you hold are topics that are often grouped in with feminist debates.
You're absolutely right, and this does not mean that those issues are not important. However, when you exclude people from identifying as a feminist on the basis of their political beliefs, you polarize issues in gender equality. Personally, when I hear this type of discussion, I almost reject it because some of these issues are ones that I am personally very passionate about. However, despite my personal political opinions, there is a very important point in there, which is that you cannot at the same time empower women to make their own choices and form their own political opinions, and also dismiss any beliefs they hold that contradict what you envision as feminism. Not only is that hypocritical, but it's also polarizing and forces people to choose between the different beliefs they hold.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of Talking Ads, and a big thank you to our guests today, Kelly and Auburn. This is the end of our program for today. Goodbye and see you next time.